Welcome to Cord Killer's Reckoning. The world of entertainment is turned upside down, and we're just trying to find out how to watch what we want, where we want, whenever we want. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian, where's the good stuff? Brian?
I mean, there's only one way for us to find out, and it's to listen to this very program.
That's right. We are here every week that we are here in order to help you navigate this wasteland of content. And when I say wasteland, that doesn't mean there isn't any content. It means the content is in strange aggregations. Sometimes it's dangerous to find. Sometimes it's wondrous. Sometimes
it's
right?
Like one-eyed content.
Yeah, it might be mutant content.
Or ghoulish content.
Yeah, indeed. Or rad roach content. There's all kinds of content. And that's why we must go on a supply run.
Events such as these will affect you in the future.
I remember when the only story we ever had, Brian, was Netflix. Do you remember those long ago days?
Oh, man, I remember when it was like, whoa, there's Netflix. And what Netflix is doing, streaming? And then there was, oh, my God, they're doing Quickster. And then there was Ike. And then there was, oh, my God, there's Originals. And then there was, oh, my God, they're giving actual numbers. And now we're where?
Now we're at the Netflix earnings report where the company knocked it out of the park. They beat earnings, they beat revenue, and they beat subscriber estimates. Netflix is riding high. Subscribers rose 16% in Q1 to reach 269.6 million subscribers worldwide, well above the 264.2 million that was expected. But that's the last time you'll ever get Q1 numbers from Netflix. Well, they'll give you Q2. They'll give you Q3 and one last wistful Q4. But Q1 numbers? Oh, no. As we move into the consolidation and monetization phase of streaming.
Oh, my God. I would love to do another show all about cords or people who have screaming services.
When you kill the cord, you get screaming. As we move into this consolidation and monetization phase, Netflix says it will no longer report total subscribers. So starting with Q1 next year, so they're giving their investors plenty of run-up, but they're saying subscribers are not going to really matter that much. We're going to focus on revenue and engagement and on things that are growing the use and money we make, not growing the user base. That means exploring new revenue streams. And co-CEO Ted Sarandos said, quote, "We're in the very early days of developing our live programming, and I would look at this as an expansion of the type of content we offer. So expect more live stunt programming a la Jake Paul fights Mike Tyson." You will still have Netflix reporting major subscriber milestones as they pass them, but they hinted they might start reporting user engagement numbers more often, like total time spent on the service. So the company's profitable now, $2.33 billion, $5.28 a share. No password crackdowns did not tank the company. They're doing just fine, thank you. They increased subscribers by cracking down on passwords. However, even though they said, we'll give you a year more of subscriber numbers, but after that, we're not going to bother anymore, investors kind of punished the stock a bit that first day. They didn't like this. And I saw a lot of people pointing and laughing of like, ah, Netflix, you know, they know this is temporary. They're going to hide the subscriber numbers. Brian, what's your take on this?
This feels like a one-for-one perfect tracking of the hard, but I believe correct decision for YouTube to shift from focusing on views per video and pivot to viewer minutes per video, because that's real engagement. That's time that they're able to sell ads on. That's a accurate reflection of the level of depth of investment that people have. Now, in that journey, one of the strange artifacts were the longer you went and the more people got engaged, the higher you were promoted in the algorithm, which is why, to be honest, part of why we got Alex Jones is because he would start off just asking, what is the history of World War II? And before you knew it, seven videos later, you're watching 6 hours of Alex Jones hawking muscle pills or whatever. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a similar strange artifacting that happens here. But considering the fact that the people who make the content want to know how much they're engaged with it. And like Netflix doesn't even give these numbers out to their own clients. They're the people who make the content for them. And they all want to know, like, well, how deeply am I reaching my audience? And I'm sure they would all love the metrics, but Netflix ain't in that business. So this is a pivot to we're going to stop flexing on subscribers, and instead we're going to start flexing on engagement, and we'll do so in whatever way makes us look best. Sincerely yours, Netflix.
Yeah, that last is always going to be true, and I don't know that you can really punish a company for doing it because they have to do it. I will push back a little bit. Netflix does share a lot of numbers with its content producers. They didn't used to, but not only have they loosened up a little bit over the years, but also the deals with the unions forced them to. So we are getting a little more out of them, but still, to your point, not a lot, right? So I do think this is very simply Netflix, understandably saying. In the early days, and they actually said this in not so many words, in the early days, all we had was subscribers. We weren't making any money in the early days. There were many years where Netflix lost money because it was a startup, and that's what you do. You lose money for a long time until you turn the corner and you start making money. And to
be honest, at this point, I mean, it's kind of their prerogative to not share all of this, except to
me that's not where my analysis is going. My analysis is subscribers were an important number in the early days. Subscribers were not very useful in the United States after a while because the market got saturated. You know, there's only a certain number of people that live in the United States, and at a certain point you're just not going to grow much anymore, right? Because there's just not enough people. They were able to keep going with subscriber numbers being useful because they went into other markets where they were starting from zero. But those are starting to mature now too. And frankly, what the investors should be caring about is not, will we be able to make money off of subscribers someday, but are we making money right now? And user engagement is a better way to say, hey, the people, subscribers we have are using the service more and more. Therefore, A, less likely to cancel. B, more likely to stick around during a price increase. And C, possibly pay for a new thing as we roll out, you know, a separate gaming subscription or something else. I would look for Netflix to do that, to say, we're going to launch new things that will bring in more money, and we'll give you subscriber numbers on those when they're young.
That's interesting. It's almost as though they're slowly educating investors insofar as you realize there are other intangibles that are quite valuable, like how long people spend with us and what merchandise they buy from us, what interactive experiences they want to have with us. And so as a result, we're going to wean you off of the simple number, the simple two-dimensional number of subscribers, and we're going to introduce the idea of a third dimension for you.
Yeah. Open Bayou points out that Facebook did the same thing. They used to announce their user numbers on a more granular basis, but they don't anymore because they reached almost as many people in the world as they could. And so they went to other metrics. Imagine you are providing a service that is only available in a town of 100,000 people. And imagine you have 95,000 people subscribe to your service. Do the number of users matter anymore after that? Like, it's going to round up to 100,000 no matter what.
Or phrased separately, ladies and gentlemen, we are now at 96,000. Like, what is that? Good. That's not going to excite people. Right?
So, as a smart investor, I want to know, like, great, you have 95,000 people paying $10 a month for your service. How are you going to make that $11 a month? Can you just raise the price, or can you sell them something else? And that's usually what companies do. Like, any store you go into wants to try to sell you more than one thing. Right. You go in for the one thing, but they want to say, like, hey, you may not have realized it, but we have this other thing, too. And maybe you need that thing, too. So I feel like that's where we're headed with Netflix. We're going to see them eventually try to spin out the gaming service, although that's moving slow. So I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. More intriguingly, would they offer some other kind of video service? are they going to do pay-per-view with their live stuff? You know, that's where it starts to get interesting.
And that's why you want to kind of, this is magician thinking right here, but it's like, if you keep everything linear, if you keep everything transactional, if you'd never have a moment where you get to close the curtain between acts, like you'll notice a magic show, somebody comes out and the curtains are wide and then the magician steps forward and then the curtains close. And then the next time they open, there's suddenly a giant what's a Medusa there. And you're like, oh, like this feels like that to me.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we are used to not looking to NBC to tell us how many people watch NBC, but getting somebody like Nielsen to estimate how many people watch NBC. And that's still going to happen. You're still going to have people estimating, okay, based on our research, we think this many people are subscribed to Netflix. But even then, like, do you care how many people subscribed or do you care about engagement? And Netflix is going to give you that number of like this many hours was viewed. So that may be more, helpful anyway.
You could make a case that they're going to overly rosify that representation.
Sure.
Like they get to cherry pick there. It's like, you know, we had the first ever Netflix con and we had this many people and that'll be what they report while they're not reporting, you know, how many people keep on going to beyond a fourth season of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's pretty standard fare.
And if they actually report engagement numbers that are hour based, like we had this many hours of viewing this month, that would be less susceptible to them making it look good, bad, or otherwise. If it's like a pure raw number, so I think that would be useful. And that way you avoid the sort of nitpicking of, well, in the U.S., they went down 0.5%, because that's where Netflix is in the U.S. They're going to go up 0.5%, down 0.5%, you know, until they fail. Right. Someday Netflix won't be a thing anymore.
Also by being one of the earliest to make this move, now they've positioned so many other services as also RANs. Like when Amazon does a similar thing or Disney makes a similar pivot or Paramount Plus makes a similar pivot or whatever. Because right now they're all still shouting subscribers.
Yeah. And honestly, even more than them looking like also rans when they pivot, looking like young startups before they do. Right. Like, oh, that's cute. They're still reporting subscriber numbers because they haven't reached maturity yet.
Oh, it's a bit like another parallel coming. Remember when web pages would proudly display the number of page hits?
Hit counter. Yeah.
It's like, what a useless metric that seems like nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I don't think this is bad at all. I don't subscribe to the take that this is Netflix worried about subscribers and trying to hide it before it gets bad, which I've seen somebody say. I think this is a sign of the maturity of the industry. And it's no surprise that Netflix, who was the only one in the industry for a while, or at least, you know, pioneered it, is the one that's already moving to this. It just seems natural to me. I don't think it's good, bad, or otherwise. It's just a natural evolution of the industry.
We've already seen this on the YouTube front. We've already seen it on even the podcasting front. We've seen it on the web page front. This is the natural order of things.
Yeah. The other natural order of things is that we do the show, and if you get value out of it, you give some of that value back to us in a way that you choose.
I like that because there is an order to it. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that most of you listen to this show totally for free? Mm-hmm. That was the first part. And the second part, did you notice that maybe we provided value? Maybe we earned a little bit of real estate of the mind in your mind, and you were able to bring up some bon mots from this very show. Now the natural order is give us money. Go to patreon.com/courtkillers.
Yeah. I mean, that value, like I said, can come in any way you want, as long as it's money at patreon.com/courtkillers.
Look, we accept all kinds of currencies, yen, pesos, dollars, pounds, sterling.
Yeah. smiles. As long as they're convertible into a currency that you can pay for your Patreon subscription with.
There is one other currency that is the most valuable of all, and that's to send us your questions at cordkillers@gmail.com.
Indeed.
Because it's like, if you feel guilty that you don't want to give us money at patreon.com/cordkillers, then write us an email at cordkillers@gmail.com, and you will be, you'll feel a lightness in your chest. You'll stand up taller, and you'll be immune to smallpox.
Yeah. And why not do both? Send us an email and support us at Patreon, in which case you'll never get sick again. Possibly. We don't know.
True.
It's time for the search party. What are we finding out there, houndies? Well, one thing they found was a Wolverine. Deadpool and Wolverine set to arrive in theaters on July 26th, and the full trailer is out, Brian, filled with Deadpool and Wolverine making jokes, hugs, battling. It actually looks pretty good.
It looks amazing, and I like the fact that, fingers crossed that they don't make a giant deal out of it in the movie itself, but there are little nods in the trailer where they mention this Wolverine was responsible for the death of the entire universe. And it's like, okay, so we're doing more multiverse shenanigans or whatever. Did you notice that there's a set piece where they're fighting in front of a decayed, decrepit, destroyed stone 20th Century Fox logo?
No, I didn't catch that. Oh, my God. How did I miss that? Yeah. No, that's great.
You keep talking. I'm going to pull up that.
Well, people on audio aren't going to be able to see it. Just go watch it, folks. I'm going to go back later and take a look at it myself. But that's amazing. I also really liked
your reaction, though, when you see it, but keep going.
I also really like the Feige won't let us talk about cocaine. And so they try to talk about cocaine and use all of the euphemisms for cocaine for what seemed like 15 minutes, but it was only a 2.5 minute trailer, so it's probably like 20 seconds, but I thought that was a good bit too, and very typical Deadpool bit as well.
And also it occurs to me that Deadpool and Wolverine both have the same superpower, like they can't possibly be killed, right?
Theoretically.
By the way, I'm so happy that you didn't see it. If you can see on the video, that's the 20th Century Fox logo
behind them. That's great. Yeah.
Like in the ruins of a decayed society.
That is the best part of Deadpool, is the clever, references and, you know, winks to the audience and stuff. So July 26th might get me out to the theaters. Who knows?
One little thing. It's like, even in the trailer, there was a recycled joke from Logan. Like, Logan is having a hard time getting his claws out. I'm like, we've seen that one before. What's going on here?
But we didn't see Deadpool make the joke. He delivered it so much better.
I guess we'll find out.
last Friday, the world's second largest TV maker, actually, I think two Fridays ago now, the world's second largest TV maker, TCL, released a trailer for a romantic comedy called Next Stop Paris. If you watch it and you've ever used a generative model to make an image once, you will recognize the style, the bad animation, I don't think anyone has six fingers, but you wouldn't be shocked given the style if they did. Chris Regina, the chief content officer for TCL, told Broadcasting Cable, yeah, we used a bunch of generative models to make the video for this movie. We're using writers. We're using actors and animators. We've been really fortunate to find a lot of great talent out there who weren't working that have become part of our team. But also, it's the first AI-generated romantic comedy. Full movie is coming to TCL's fast service, TCL Plus. So if you have a TCL TV that's built into a lot of them, this summer. The characters don't even look the same all the way through the trailer. And this is the trailer, which is supposed to show you the best parts of the movie. I feel like TCL knows everybody's going to talk about this, and that's what they wanted.
Magic the Gathering is a fairly popular card game, Tom. And when I went to college in 1993, we played the very first edition of it. I love telling people that I gave away my Black Lotus, which is now worth $600,000. But they talked about how they knew they had something special because the original proto cards, all they did was they bought comic books and they just cut out images from the comic books and they literally pasted them onto cards. And people began to become very possessive about the cards. No, no, no. This one's special because of this rules or its rareness or all of that stuff. It is very, very easy right now for everyone to roll their eyes at perceiving this as low effort content. And that is true if you know, are Steven Spielberg and you don't feel like bothering to make a Steven Spielberg movie. However, if you view it from the context of what if there's a new story that you've never heard before and it never in a million years would have made it through any traditional Hollywood system, but some version of it, like the version of Magic the Gathering made with comic book art cut, pasted onto cards, could exist. Would that change how you feel about it? And I'm not asking you yourself, Tom, but but the listening audience.
Yeah. I would be very interested if something like that ever happened. Because this is not that.
Okay. Well, it's not a groundbreaking story.
This is like a on rails, totally uninventive romantic comedy story.
Man, you derailed my whole thing. I was on rails until you derailed me. I thought I had a pretty good point.
You have a great point. When someone does that someday, this ain't it. Is my only point. Like, I'm with you. Like, it will be, people will mock it and there'll be a weird story and that'll be fun. But the fact that they used writers and actors and animators, I think made this less interesting in a lot of ways. But because it clearly is a generative model and the landscape kind of looks wonky and weird and it's an uncanny valley in the way they look, got people talking. And probably what they wanted was everyone to know that TCL Plus is a thing, and now they do.
Yeah. Man, I should have saved that argument for a better product.
Oh, don't worry. We'll all forget. You could roll it back out. We'll all think it's an amazing, amazing argument when it's all time. Right. Here's something to cheer you up, though. Fallout was renewed for season 2, which it better have been with that ending. But yes, Fallout has been renewed for season 2.
We talked about Fallout in After Talk last week, right? Is that where
we did? If you missed After Talk or you're not a patron and you don't get After Talk, we did a full spoiler of the entire season 1 of Fallout. And we'll probably talk to Amos about it again this week because Amos has now watched it. We want to get his opinions as well.
Oh, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we call the first of three pulses. If you've ever seen Poltergeist, here's what happens. They come in threes. My internet will go out 2 more times and there will be hiccups. I, however, don't want to edit this episode. So every time it happens, I'll just keep talking.
The weirdest thing is I didn't notice anything happen. So you just started saying that.
So out of nowhere, I just announced that. That's right. And plus, also, you post the audio for now anyway.
No, never mind. Brian has a poltergeist is the side note to this. But I mean, and there's really not much to say other than yay, right, for Fallout Season 2.
Yeah, I'm on my second lap of Fallout Season 1, and it's interesting because, like, our friend Justin Robert Young, he feels like it relies too much on fan service to people who actually played the game, and he's certain that it's a lot of fun for people who played the game, but meanwhile, for him, it's kind of a mediocre TV show, although as I'm watching it, it does dip and it does do some fan service, but those last 2 episodes get pretty freaking good.
Most of that fan service was lost on me and I still thought it was amazing. So your mileage may vary.
Okay. Well,
Hacks season 3 reveals trailer, and stuff. It's coming to Max on May 2nd. Hax is back. They're going to reconcile. It's in the trailer. It's not much of a spoiler. You wouldn't have much of a season if they didn't. You're going to see the group getting back together for one last run.
Yeah. Well, and knowing that it's the last season, it's like, okay, they gotta reconcile, you know? But boy, it's like an inverted three act structure where it's like act one, you know, of course we have our protagonist, or depending on who you squint at, our protagonist at a low point, at the end of season or act two, again, if either our protagonist, depending on which one you think is the protagonist, is on top of the world or at her lowest moment. And then season three is going to be, I assume, some kind of balancing out of things.
Yeah, it looks like it's the reverse of season one. Season one was, I'm comfortable where I am, but I'm a failure. Can you help? Season three, given this trailer, looks like, I am uncomfortable where I am because I'm so successful. Can you help?
Yeah. And then everyone makes friends.
Exactly. For All Mankind has been renewed for a fifth season, keeps on barreling on to beyond Mars, I guess. And Apple has greenlit a spinoff, which will tell the story of the moon landing. So going back to season one from the Soviet side. So we're going to get For All Mankind USSR version.
So we get Apollo 11 from Baikonur, Kazakhstan.
Yeah. From Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know some of the story from the version of For All Mankind we've already seen, but I think it'll be interesting to see if they can pull off a compelling story that says, you know, the twists, you know, the conceit, but you don't know how it felt on that side. I don't know how many seasons they can run with it, though, because very quickly in seasons two and definitely in seasons three,
it's like basically season one is, we did it, we're the underdog, we won. Every other season after that is like, they just keep beating us.
Well, yeah, there's that. But where I was going was, you get the Soviet side of the story. You start to have characters in the Soviet Union in the later seasons of For All Mankind. So there's less mystery to be revealed at those points. So I'm guessing this won't run as long as For All Mankind.
I feel like once per year I check in with you, Tom, and ask, so yes, go all in or no. And you, first season you were on the fence. Every season since, you've been like, yes, it's worth it.
Yeah. I think, and there's a character, I think I always say this too, but there's a character that comes in the third season that, you will be very interested in. I don't know if you'll like them or hate them or not either, but it will play to your sensibilities. Witcher is going to get a season five, and that'll be it. Season four and five will film back to back, and then they're done. These are the seasons without Henry Cavill, too.
This is rampant speculation, but we've heard about the curse of, like, the Netflix deals where, you know, you get this much for the first few seasons, but then if you keep on going, it's the best deal in the world. Is this a victim of that, do you think, or no? Or is it a victim of just, like, it's run its course?
I don't know how much of that is true. That stuff tends to be a little bit exaggerated and a little bit true. I feel like it's just run its course. I think Netflix generally makes decisions the way any other television entity makes decisions. Are people watching it? Is it keeping people subscribed to our service? If yes, make more of them. If not, don't. So I feel like they're looking at this as saying, you know, we're probably not going to keep getting a lot of juice out of this squeeze. So let's throw the rind away. To push the metaphor beyond any kind of sense.
But before we throw the rind away, let's zest it and put it in a tasty martini. Use the whole buffalo, we say.
Okay, this one starts good, then becomes bad, and then maybe becomes good again. Star Trek Strange New Worlds has been renewed for a fourth season. Yay! Season three is coming sometime in 2025. The fifth season of Lower Decks, however, will be the last. Boo. No. However, showrunner Mike McMahon said that the crew of the Cerritos could, quote, live on with new adventures. Yay.
I don't know. I know that Lower Decks is very precious to me. But I also know that we entered Lower Decks very highly skeptical of it. And I think both of us were just delighted and surprised.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. The gift
that we got from Mike McCann. I trust him. I trust him. Whatever it is he's going to do.
So I had a couple of theories. One is, based on the crossover with Strange New Worlds, what if they just go, you know what? Let's just do live action from now on. So Lower Decks is canceled, but Lower Decks live action is the new adventures of the crew of the Cerritos. The other thought was, how I've always wondered, how long can you keep up the conceit? You know, this is not The Simpsons where the kids just never grow up and it's fine. How long can you keep up the conceit that these folks are going to stay in the Lower Decks on the Cerritos, right?
Well, already we've seen them graduate.
They've graduated out of that, become lieutenants and all of that. What if these four characters, our four main characters, get a ship of their own?
Or what if they, then all of a sudden it's like, Lower Decks, that intellectual property that was originally established with these agreements and these deals with this talent, is now being replaced with a totally new property called First Class.
Yeah, right. Upper Decks. Yeah. Yes.
Or On the Bridge.
Yeah, you know? Something like that. So I think one of those is a pretty good bet, but we'll see. We'll find out. Peacemaker season 2 finally started filming. James Gunn shared some photos from the set. So if you liked season 1 and you were hoping someday to get season 2, that's good news. Beatles Let It Be film is heading to Disney Plus. This has been restored by Peter Jackson. He used a lot of bits of the Let It Be documentary in his Get Back documentary. But the actual film Let It Be that was released in the early 70s now has been unavailable. You could find it used on film canisters and stuff, but like it was basically impossible to find. And now it'll be on Disney Plus as of May 8th.
Did they happen to mention in the press release whether or not they would be re-editing it? Because it seemed like it was kind of a hatchet job.
Yeah, no, this will be the original edit restored. You know, okay. So they gussied it up and made it look good the way he did with the film that he had in Get Back. So it'll look better than it did originally. But as far as I can tell, they're not planning to change it. This is going to be the original edit. Get Back was Peter Jackson's re-edit of it, basically.
I mean, yes. Just all of that raw footage.
Yeah, yeah.
Fresh in 4K. Yeah.
And then finally, Netflix has unveiled a teaser for a series version of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, filmed in Colombia with the support of the Garcia Marquez family.
I am unfamiliar with this story, question mark.
It's a literary classic in translation, and it is beloved by many. It's considered to be... Oh, now I'm blanking on the term for it. It's not surrealism, but there's a literary term for the sort of magical realism. That's what it is. Magical realism of it. I read it back when I lived in Austin. I can actually picture myself in my apartment on Duval reading it in my 20s. It's a great book. I don't know if you can capture it by putting it on film, but Netflix is going to try and we'll see.
Well, I mean, you know my rule, and I faced the abyss myself when it came to Fallout.
Yeah.
My rule is, please, everyone, keep trying everything. Like, that's how we all win.
Yeah, if it doesn't work, I won't keep watching it, but it's fine. And the opening line of the novel is the line they use in the trailer, so they're basically signaling, like, we're fans just like you of this work. We're going to try to honor it. Ooh, G. James B. suggests maybe it'll be Star Trek Lower Decks, The Next Generation.
Oh, murder. They're just all 20 years older or something.
Or they're the bridge crew, and there's a new Lower Decks crew that they have to manage. And they're like, oh, it was so annoying to be.
Except they're even younger. And it's like, now we have Mariner yelling at her kid.
Yes. Yes. Mariner becomes the mom. That's kind of genius, G. James B. I sort of love it. All right. It is time for us to look for that buried treasure. Have you found anything, Brian?
You know what? So my daughter, while you were here in Austin, Texas, her band, Almost a Girl Band, they won the Battle of the Bands at world famous Stubbs Barbecue here in Austin. And along with that comes a little bit of cultural cachet and the ability to book other gigs. And so they booked a gig at the Carousel Lounge, which it was interesting because I guess you saw some post on Facebook that you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, no, I saw on Instagram that they had booked it, or maybe Twitter. I don't remember, but yeah, I saw that she was going to be playing at the Carousel Lounge, a place that I went to probably with my copy of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude and drank Miller High Life, and my favorite interaction with a bartender waiter ever was when I ordered a Miller. She said High Life. I said yep, and she said champagne of beers, and then walked away. And that has stuck with me as the essence of the Carousel Lounge ever since.
Well, I have wonderful news. The Carousel Lounge lives on as a delightful venue. I can't exactly recommend with 4 stars on Yelp all of the graffitied buildings that surround it now, but I'll be gosh darned if that venue isn't surviving. It's like in an island of decay. And that only made me all the more proud that my daughter and her band performed there. Now, I tell you all this as preamble because, like, on the ride back, I was like, I think you should watch Tom Hanks's directorial debut, That Thing You Do. Do you remember this movie, Tom?
I don't. I did not remember this movie because I had to ask you about it before we did the show.
So this is the reason that one of Tom Hanks's companies is called Playtone Records. Basically, Tom Hanks plays a minor role as the producer executive who discovers kind of a second-rate Beatles called the Wonders. And it is amazing because when I first watched it back in the, I think, late 90s, I was like, okay, well, this all seems cheeky and on the nose. And then 30 years passed, Tom, and I lived that life. And now I could absolutely verify this is an ironclad documentary of exactly how production, distribution, live showcases, the whole nine yards go.
Oh, that's fantastic. Incredible. So, of course, you wanted to make Josie watch that, right?
I just floated it out there. And then what's funny is, like, they do a Battle of the Bands. She had done it just the week before. And she goes, and she saw how awkward it was. And she was like, this is uncomfortable. they're being held to contracts that are being flashed in their face. And I'm like, this is uncomfortable.
Yep.
It's really a delight. It's a short hop, but it's colorful, delightful. And I am willing to vouch, completely accurate.
That Thing You Do. That is the definition of buried treasure right there, because I don't hear a lot of people talking about that, and it sounds wonderful. I would like to update everyone on Star Trek Discovery, which is in its final season, and it's back. It is definitely an interesting comparison to be watching Fallout 2 weekends ago and Star Trek Discovery in the same week, and realizing that one was a breeze and the other sometimes felt like homework. I enjoy Star Trek Discovery because I enjoy all things Star Trek and I like to see where they're going with the lore. I am happy to say that the most recent episode felt like a Star Trek episode, where there was just a really interesting plot line and resolution. And even though it was fitting into an overarching plot for the season, had a beginning, middle, and end, that was fun. And then Then they did, or I'm sorry, that was two episodes ago. Then the most recent episode got a little magical, got a little foofy, which Star Trek Discovery can do sometimes. And it, I didn't love it. I don't think they crossed a line per se with Star Trek being science and not magic, but it was a little close to that line for my taste. So
I mean, after everything after introducing Q means magic is real.
Sort of. The thing with Q is like he's just a being we don't understand who exists outside of time. And that's hand wavy, but it's like, well, those are all legitimate scientific concepts. I was missing the legitimate scientific concepts that they usually, you know, throw their magic into. That said, I'm into the plot line. It is a reference to a Next Generation episode, and Picard's name gets brought up here and there because of his part in that episode, but he's not essential to it. It doesn't feel like fan service. It just feels like no, we're basing it on that episode, so occasionally we have to mention the people who took part of it, and that episode in Star Trek Discovery's timeline took place 800 years ago, so there's a really interesting, you know, ancient history, you know, archaeology aspect, but also something you might know if you're a TNG fan.
There was a fair bit of that in Fallout, and we talked about this in After Talk last week, but a lot of double meaning lines in Fallout where it's like, if you played the game, you know, when they talk about the golden rule in the wastelands, it has a double meaning, but it doesn't, you don't lose anything if you don't know.
Yeah, it didn't bother me not knowing it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, if you got something we should be on the lookout for buried treasure, let us know. Email us at courtkillers@gmail.com. Brian, you got anything?
Yep. To sell? Not right now, Tom. You know what? Let me take this opportunity to speak from the heart and just say, thank you to everybody who came out to, Founders Day Eclipse event. That was, I pushed off an awful lot over the last 3 months, and now the bill has come due. So if you would like to get an email from me asking you to buy something soon, then head on over to gimme.scamstuff.com. There may or may not be a giveaway. I don't know. I haven't looked in weeks. But if you sign up at gimme.scamstuff.com, you'll be on the email list. And that's the backbone, the engine that keeps all of the miracles happening over here. So thank you to everybody who came out. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who showed interest. It was really magical.
Yeah, I think what Brian's trying to say is, if you want the sun to come back again next time there's an eclipse, you better help him out.
I already took a hostage once. I can do it again.
He'll do it again, folks. Don't put it past him. Boy, that takes a long time. Every week I feel like I'm like, it's going to happen. It takes a long time. Time for scanning the horizon. ATSC 3.0 equipped stations in the U.S. Will soon begin airing local news that you can skip through, pause, or even restart from the beginning. You don't need a DVR. You don't need anything attached to your TV. You just need an ATSC 3.0 equipped television. ATSC 3.0 is the broadcast standard in the U.S. that will someday replace current ATSC, although they are planning to continue to broadcast both at the same time for quite a while. So it shouldn't end up causing anybody to lose their signal. But there's a lot of interactive elements. You hear a lot of people talking about the advertising-oriented ones for two reasons. One, that's a nice scare tactic to tell people they're going to target you over the broadcast. But also, it's appealing to advertisers who want to have more interactive advertising. But this is one that doesn't involve advertising. It's a little bit of interactivity with the broadcast, where essentially you're downloading the news broadcast locally into memory on your television, and then being able to bounce around in it.
And so you have some kind of, I assume, finite buffer for it, where local news being of a unique civic value.
I assume it's like a half hour show, right? You know, yeah. And that's all that it can handle.
Yeah.
But yeah, check it out. The Verge has an article about it. If you're into broadcast, I know some of you are, this might be something you want to play around with. Apollo Global Management really wants to buy Paramount, but Sherry Redstone really doesn't want to sell it to them, and would rather merge Paramount into Skydance, likely making it a juicier target for a further acquisition. So Apollo Management has decided, well, if we're going to get her attention, we need to make our offer juicier. So they're teaming up with Sony Pictures Entertainment, according to the New York Times, to jointly bid for Paramount. Right now, Paramount is only talking to Skydance, so there's nothing to Sony Apollo's joint bid at this point. But, you know, if those talks with Skydance don't go well, or if there's a pause in them, you know, they might take a meeting, and Sony would then be kind of pitching in with Apollo to provide the money to jointly acquire Paramount.
Man, it's good that we read the news. Emotionally though, Tom, I just, all these splintering characters reacquiring each other and all of it speculative makes it hard for me to want to invest a lot. Is this what it's like to be a sports fan? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I look at this story as like, oh, here we go. I've been telling you consolidation phase is coming. I've been telling you once Hulu is ownership is settled, and once AT&T is free to make offers, you know, or Warner Brothers Discovery is free from AT&T, from the restrictions imposed by the spinoff from AT&T. I think you're going to see more of these. So to me, this is less about what do you think and more like, here we go. The dance begins.
Yep, I agree.
Did you hear that Keanu Reeves is voicing Shadow the Hedgehog in the next Sonic movie?
I actually think I did hear about this from one of my kids. They were very excited about it. Keanu Reeves can do no wrong, except for the time that he used the F slur in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
There you go. But everybody has a beauty mark to show off their beauty. And that was Keanu Reeves. Yes. And then a tiny little note here. Amazon is bringing its Amazon Live shoppable streams to Prime Video and Freevee. Previously, you could only get them on desktop, mobile, and on Fire TV, Amazon's own Fire TV. But they decided, you know what? We'd like people to watch these streams. So they're putting it on Prime Video and Freevee.
I'll tell you what, I'd be curious, like the closest parallel, of course, is QVC. And when I think of QVC, I think about how that's how Dirty Jobs' Mike Rowe got his start. Was he would be the guy up at 2 a.m. just sort of rolling with things, being funny when he didn't need to be, because he knew that very few people were watching, doing double entendres and stuff. I have to think that if they're intentionally adopting a similar structure, that they're going to curate some clever Mike Rose in the up and comings.
Yeah, it seems to me that previously the shoppable live stream was meant to increase sales, taking existing Amazon customers and saying, hey, let's encourage you to buy more things. That's why it was only available on desktop and mobile. Now they're looking at it as, oh, we need to bring in new customers. We need to get people to buy something in the first place. And so you put it in your existing Prime Video and Freevee, hoping that people do the lean back QVC thing with it rather than it being an impulse thing.
And in fact, I wonder if they're shopping for some kind of character similar to, is it Deborah Vance from Hacks? A fabulous personality who just draws people in and unrepentantly is selling stuff.
Are you saying you're interested?
I might have mid-sentence realized what I was doing just then.
All right, let's check out the chatter, folks. Thanks for the emails, cordkillers@gmail.com. Tim Sinclair Lee signed up for 3 months of Sling, saying it was the cheapest way to watch March Madness, but has two annoyances as a brand new Sling TV subscriber. One, if you watch a game that's live from the cloud DVR so that you can watch it from the beginning, even though it already started, they don't assign enough bandwidth to it. Free throws are clear, but actual gameplay was a blocky nightmare. Number two, apparently Starlink is considered outside the United States because it's in space and is therefore blocked. For week one, I was fine, but then they blocked me. I spent an hour on hold with a representative. Starlink wasn't an option on the provider's pull down. She managed to get it fixed. Then 2 weeks later, I was blocked again. I called again, and they basically said, too bad, and would not refund me the last couple of months. I could stream on my phone if I disconnected from the Wi-Fi, but to watch it on TV, I had to open a hotspot and use that instead, which didn't help with the available bandwidth. Needless to say, my wife, who is the one who watches, was more than a little frustrated with this. Just wanted to whine to someone who knows the dilemmas of cutting the cord. Thanks from a March 2025 YouTube TV subscriber, Tim Sinclair Lee.
Hashtag 21st century problems. My provider's in space.
And no one knows how to geo-block them. Oh, well,
right. We got an email from TJ Asher, who says that he was happy that the eclipse events worked out. He said he intended to be here, but got scared off by the weather forecast. He was able to see it in Missouri, but and also said, glad to hear that fallout is good. He says, a funny anecdote, while they were driving to Missouri to go see the eclipse, they were listening to Cord Killers, and then we read his email about the movie trailer game that they play. He got quite the surprise. Too funny. You too can have that surprise. Drop us an email, cordkillers@gmail.com.
Indeed. Like Jason did. He said, hey guys, I seem to have lost access to the show through Patreon. When I go to Patreon, you don't show up under my membership any longer. So I go to try to resubscribe. And when I do, it says I'm already a member. Any suggestions?
We got two
suggestions. First suggestion is contact customer support at Patreon and be very patient and persistent, and they can fix it. I know people have had varying levels of success at this, but it is possible to be fixed. It just takes some work on their end. There's also another more expedient way of going about this, Brian.
One might call it a hack, my friend. Most of the people who have this problem were people who either cheekily or whatever, subscribed at the 1 cent per episode or 5 cents per episode that we did at the very beginning. And there's some flaw that prevents you from getting in again. If you want to just work, if you have a whole bunch of other patronage that you support, then by all means do the very slow motion thing that Tom suggested. But if you want to, if we're the only ones you support, a fast hack is if you have Gmail lets you make new addresses, just like, let's say my name is brianbrushwood@gmail.com. Yeah, I could do brianbrushwood plus literally anything at gmail.com. And that will be, air quotes, a totally different address. And then I could subscribe, air quotes, for the first time to any Patreon that I want to. So if that works for you, great. But either way, thank you so much for your support, because the people who are having this problem are long timers who have been there from the beginning.
Yeah. And I think I don't know this for sure, but I think what Patreon did was noticed all of these sub-dollar amounts, which were perfectly legitimate in the early days. They didn't understand the problem of doing that in the early days, so they even encouraged it. And turns out it actually loses them money when you don't have a pledge that is larger than the flat fee for the transaction. They at some point in the past just disallowed anything below a dollar. However, they didn't delete those memberships. They just disallowed them. And so the system says, well, you already have a membership. It's just not, you know, allowed. But the content isn't getting paid for because they're not charging those small amounts. And so it's a little hack that they have to do on the back end that, you can get them to do it. Just be patient and kind and understanding and persistent, and it'll get done. Or do what Brian said and just do like my name plus new Cord Killers at Gmail.
Just show up with a top hat and a mustache.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, sir. I would like to support the patrons.
I'm Pyan Pushwood. Totally different guy. Folks, our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillersplusthankyou@gmail.com. And we're live on twitch.tv/nightattack Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I reckon we'll talk to you next time.